Welcome to Home Ground. I'm Brian Kahn. Suppose you grew up in a Montana ranching family, that the ranch had been part of your extended family's heritage for four generations. Suppose that you spent a lot of your childhood there, worked there as a boy, and decided by age 12 that your life would be to carry on the family tradition, that someday you would have the responsibility of managing it, the grass, the water, the cattle, the sheep, the wildlife. And finally, suppose you're now 29, and what you set your mind and heart on and prepared most of your life for is coming to pass. What have you done to be ready? Cooper Hippard, many thanks for joining us on Home Ground.
Thank you for having me.
Let's talk about the early years. What do you remember about your exposure to the ranch? How does it come to your mind?
It was a childhood that I wouldn't have traded for anything, that exposure to open space and animals, grounded people. My great-grandmother always used to say she felt sorry for boys who did not get to grow up on ranches, so I was one of those fortunate few.
The ranch is between Helena and Great Falls. Did you grow up in Helena in part of the time, or did you live the ranch full-time? How was that?
I grew up in Helena most all my childhood until I was 9 years old. We lived on a small place west of Helena, mm-hmm. where my dad raised horses and bulls for the main operation. And so that's where I spent my time learning how to ride a bike, learning how to ride horses, being around livestock.
I had forgotten that. I've known your family for quite a while, but you did have the ranch west of Helena, the operation, so you were around animals there as well as on the main ranch.
Correct. And then when that sold when I was 8 or 9, I'd spend my school season here in Helena, and in the summers, we'd all move up to the ranch and spend the whole summer up at the ranch, and many of the weekends throughout the school year would be spent at the ranch, which was why I didn't do many school sports.
Now, the main ranch is a big ranch. I think it's in some tens of thousands of acres. Can you describe the operation, what's involved?
It's changed throughout the years. Currently, it's mainly a cow-calf operation, and we calve in June, which is an anomaly for
yes.
this part of the world.
Usually it's like January, February?
Correct. That change was made in 2000 or 2002. With the efforts of trying to match the cattle production cycle with the natural grass cycle so that nature is doing all the work instead of us humans.
We'll come back to that. I think your uncle and I, Chase Hibbard, discussed that aspect of the operation in an interview a few years ago, that change. So for you growing up then, you were seeing this large landscape, cattle and then sheep were quite active too at that time, correct, in your operation?
They were, yes. We had a band while I was growing up, as well as a flock of purebred Targhees sheep, which we still have, the flock of purebreds. I think it was about 4 years ago that we sold our commercial band of Targhees.
So what do you remember about all that? That's a long time ago now. What sticks with you?
The culture on the ranch was totally different. It was a high input, high output operation, meaning there were, depending on the year, 8, 10, 12 full-time employees. And so the culture that evolved from that, it was like a very rich, small town of sorts, is what it seemed to me growing up, and that there was always people, there was families.
People living on the ranch people, as families. The ranch employees had families on the ranch.
Correct. And so growing up, I had a lot of friends on the ranch who were from these ranch families, and we would go out and just ride bikes or horses or go swimming or jumping off cliffs into water and getting into all sorts of mischief and trouble that our parents probably never really knew about.
So what leads a kid at the age of 12, which is pretty young, to say, I want to do this. I want this as my life.
I don't quite remember what led to that epiphany, but it wasn't really a choice. I remember that. It was just something I knew that I had to do, that it was a part of me, I guess.
So you're 12, you have this fundamental realization. What changes when over time in terms of doing something about it?
The immediate change being a 12-year-old kid, it was just that all of my free time I wanted to spend at the ranch or doing ranch activities, specifically riding horses with my grandma. That was a huge part of my childhood growing up, was going riding horses with my grandma. And then that, once I went into high school and started thinking about what I needed, I started to think about what I needed to do to prepare myself for this daunting task. And the plans just kind of solidified. Didn't ever seem to be too many choices as far as...
In other words, the decision led to specific choices rather than a wide array of choices.
Correct.
Where'd you go to college and why?
I went to Cal Poly, San Luis Obispo, Central Coast of California. Reason being that they have a renowned agricultural program with an emphasis on ranching. And I knew at that point that I wanted to live in Montana the rest of my life. And so I thought living out of state for 4-5 years probably wouldn't do me any harm.
Interesting way to phrase it. Montanans tend to be pretty prideful of place, and sometimes you hear we have nothing to learn from anybody outside Montana. People take pride in being fourth or fifth generation. Was that your attitude, that you wouldn't really learn anything from some other place by being in some other place, or did you have the idea that maybe you would?
First, I was definitely the epitome of the proud Montanan. I was am extremely proud. But I think it was more along the lines of exposing myself to a different part of the American culture, a different landscape within the United States. That, I've always been a believer of putting yourself outside of your comfort zone is a great catalyst for learning.
So you're at Cal Poly. You study agriculture and ranch management. What'd you learn at the end of that you didn't know when you went there?
The most, not only tangible course to ranching, but eye-opening course that I took within all of my college career was called holistic management. Holistic management is basically a different take on ranch management, which tries to understand all the different intricacies and relationships between all the different parts of the natural resource base, all the different ecosystem processes.
That sounds fairly complicated. I remember taking a class in HRM, as it was called at the time. It involved water cycles and mineral cycles, and as you say, the interrelationship of the dynamics of grazing on the land, historic grazing patterns, I think, by wild animals is the basis of it?
That's correct. The main difference between holistic management and traditional ranch management would be holistic grazing. And holistic grazing builds off the theory that all the grasslands in the world co-evolved with huge migrating herds of grazing animals, that their grazing patterns were upset and spurred to keep on moving in one cohesive bunch because of predators. And so our job as stewards and as ranch managers are to try to mimic that process of huge herds moving through the landscape, hitting the grass, and then giving it a significant amount of time to rest.
You're listening to Home Ground. I'm Brian Kahn. We're talking with Cooper Hibbard about what it takes to be ready to manage the family ranch. Now, HRM, as I understand it, is a pretty dramatic departure from what I'll call traditional Western grazing, which is static herds over long periods of times in fenced pastures. Fair?
Very fair.
So how did that strike you? Heresy or what?
No, it struck me as the answer. I think it was what needed to happen. It was the future. It addressed so many things that were starting to drag down ranching, or had been dragging down ranching, from not only internally trying to make it operations work and pass on one generation to another, but as well as the public's perception of what we do. Really, it changes everything. I think now ranchers, we are the stewards of the public's resources, and we have this incredible tool at our touch to exercise incredible positive change.
In our conversation the other day, you mentioned you minored in Spanish in San Luis Obispo. Why was that?
By the time I was about 13 or 14, the ranch brought on seasonal workers from Mexico. Just great. Couldn't ask for better people. And as I saw it, that was a change in the agricultural landscape in the United States. It was probably going to continue on for a long time. And if I was going to be serious about managing my family's place effectively in the future, I would need to be able to communicate in Spanish. And so I'd been exposed to this culture and...
Through the workers on your ranch.
Through the workers on the ranch, and I'd been exposed to the language. So I decided to study it a little more, and part of that was going, while I was in college, went to a language immersion program in Mexico for a summer.
Okay, before we get there, how did the people impress you that you worked with, the laborers, the farm workers that had worked on your place, and why? What kind of people?
Big-hearted, hardworking, very generous, extremely disciplined.
Surprise you in any way? In other words, we have stereotypes as cultures.
It didn't, because I think I was young enough where the stereotypes hadn't impacted my own judgments. And so I was taken aback by, there's a certain amount of depth, I think, to the Mexican character that we don't necessarily have, and I think the root of it is that they're more of a communal type culture, and so there's this generosity and understanding that really struck me.
So as I recall, the combination of your reaction to the Mexican people you worked with and your interest in holistic range management leads you at some point to spend a fair amount of time in Mexico on ranches. Fair?
That's correct.
Tell us about it.
I had originally arranged a six-month stay on three different ranches in the state of Chihuahua in northern Mexico, which after I'd already gotten to Mexico to visit these workers that have come up for my family, I received an email from one of the ranchers saying that they'd all been canceled because of the drug wars. And so while I was in Mexico, I was able to reschedule two other stays on two different ranches that I was currently unaware of. The first day was in the state of Coahuila, which was south of Texas, and the second ranch was in Sonora, south of Arizona. And the first ranch in Coahuila, it's a legendary ranch. Everyone in Mexico knows about it. In northern Mexico, I should say. Mainly because of how progressive they are. The founder was the first man to bring Alan Savory over to the American continent.
And Savory was the founder of Holistic Range Management.
That's correct.
Okay, so this guy brought him over about when, roughly?
I think in the late 70s.
You're going down there in what year?
This was in 2009.
Okay.
I'd wanted to go there to expose myself to different ranches, practicing holistic management successfully. I'd only ever worked for my family, so I thought it good to get out, work for others, learn from other people. And what struck me about that ranch, I'd heard about how successful they'd been. But I was picked up at a bus stop in a small town in a big stock truck by two of the ranch hands. And it was a single cab stock truck, and I was sitting in the middle. And we're driving up to the ranch, and the ranch is 5 hours from any signs of civilization.
5 hours from the bus stop?
More than 5 hours from the bus stop. And the ranch was really high up in a mountain valley in the Sierra Madres. And by the time we were getting up to the valley, it was dark. And all you could see was what was in the headlights.
You on a highway, you on a dirt road?
We're on a dirt road. And all you could see in the headlights was just dirt. Every now and then, a cactus, few scrub plants. And we'd go through one gate, and we'd go through another gate. Finally, we went through a third gate, and the grass was above the headlights of the stock truck, which is about 4 feet tall. And finally, the driver turned to me and he said, "Now we're on the ranch."
So that was your introduction to holistic range management on this classic ranch in Mexico. How long were you there?
I was there for about 2.5 months.
What did you learn?
Many things. The unique thing about this day was that I got to choose whatever I wanted to do.
So it was sort of an internship as opposed to a regular work.
It was. It was an internship.
Okay.
I spent a lot of time bouncing around in a pickup with the ranch manager, who was a couple years older than myself and the grandson of this legendary rancher. And I have a lot of respect for this guy. He's doing great things down there. Many of the days I spent out with the cowboys, and we'd meet at about 5:30 at the horse corrals. And this was January, so it was cold. And first thing we'd do is we'd light a huge fire outside the horse corrals, and we'd just stand around the fire for about half an hour, turning our chaps over the flames and warming up our bridles over the fire so to warm the bit before putting it in the horse's mouth. And then we'd catch our horses in the dark and saddle them by firelight and trot out in the dark, and we'd just trot or lope. Sometimes they would just lope out. Yeah. And we'd go and check pastures and check cattle and do that every day, 7 days a week. And then when our horses would tire, we'd take our string, which would be whichever horses we'd been riding for those 2 weeks, and we'd pony them, which is put a halter on them and lead them behind us. And we'd trot up into the mountains where the other horse herd, where the rest of the horses are. And we'd turn our horses loose and go and round up the other horses and bring them down out of the mountains, and they'd come smoking down at a run down to the barbed wire fence.
Sounds like a scene out of a movie.
Yeah, it felt like a scene out of a movie. So the horses are all charged up, and we get them down to the fence, and there'd just be about three of us cowboys. And the cowboys would ride in front of the horses once we got to the fence, and they'd yell, "Fórmense," which is basically, "Compose yourselves." And the horses would all get in a line and back up with their haunches to the fence in a perfect line, one after the other. Everything pressed up against the fence.
Their butts against the fence, facing out in a line.
Correct. Their butts against the fence, facing out in a line. And the horses we turned loose would go and get in place. And the older horses would put the younger horses in their places by laying their ears back and biting at them. And then we would get off our horses, turn the horses we were riding loose, walk up, catch the horses that we wanted for the next 2 weeks, saddle them up, and then take off.
I have been around horses, cowboyed 40-some years ago, never heard of anything remotely like that. Had you?
No, I'd never heard of it.
And these guys didn't, I mean, how did the horses learn to do this?
No one could really answer that question for me. It's something that was basically institutionalized, I think, within the horse herd. It happened before anybody was there. The only explanation they could give me is that they trained a few decades ago. These horses were trained to do this, and so any newer, younger horses that were brought on, the older horses would train them what to do when it was time for them to, for the foreman say.
That's remarkable. You're listening to Home Ground, and I'm Brian Kahn. We're talking with Cooper Hibbard about what it takes to be ready to manage the family ranch. You said you worked at two ranches. What was the second one?
The second one was in Sonora, and it was a much smaller ranch, which had an incredible story behind it. The rancher who I went to work for, this was an actual job as a herder. He inherited the ranch from his father with more than $1 million in debt. His father was a very successful businessman who practiced industrial agriculture on a large scale.
Meaning?
He bought this ranch in the middle of Sonoran Desert, plowed up all the vegetation, installed a number of center pivots, uh-huh. And at its height, This ranch was running 40 tractors a day and burning 5,000 liters of diesel every day.
And losing money?
Hand over fist.
So the old man changed it, or who changed the management?
The old man unexpectedly had a heart attack, and so his son, Yvonne, when he was 24, which was my boss, returned home, had heard of holistic management, and decided to implement holistic management. And so he sold all the center pivots, sold all the tractors, got rid of most of his workers, and just practiced holistic grazing. And I saw a photo from the time period when he inherited the ranch, and it looked like a photo from the Dust Bowl, where there's the homestead and then nothing around it.
How's it look now?
You'd never know. There's trees 20 feet high. It is incredibly healthy. You can see his fence line from a hilltop just by the difference in the color of leaves between his pastures and his neighbors.
That was 2009. We're in 2014 as we're doing this show. Have you worked in other geographic locations as well as Mexico?
I have. I worked on a ranch and a ranch manager training program in Colorado for 2 years. I worked on a ranch in Patagonia, a ranch in northern Argentina, and two large cattle stations in northern Australia.
For a guy that said when he was thinking about going to Cal Poly, it maybe wouldn't do me any harm to get around, see something different, seems like you've covered a lot of ground. I assume that was intentional, and if so, why? Why the diversity of experience?
It was very intentional. My thought at the time was the more I could expose myself to other practices and what works for other people, what is possible, especially in other environments and other cultures, because that is, as I said before, is a stimulus for learning, I think. Mm-hmm. And if you put yourself in those circumstances, your amount of absorption is exponential. And so if it's in whatever you're studying, ranching for me, I think the experience was much richer.
So that's taken some time. When did you get back to the family ranch?
I came back December of 2012.
Roughly a year.
Roughly a year.
Now, you mentioned in relation to one of the Mexican ranchers that he was a progressive. That's not a term normally associated with ranching culture, which I would say is traditional, rural, conservative. And one of the elements of it, in my personal experience, which goes back a ways, is people tend to hang on to what they've done in the past because they think it worked pretty well and they're pretty skeptical about trying something that hasn't been proven. Would you agree with my generalization?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so here comes a young guy that's looking to take over the management of the family ranch. Presumably there's been some sort of agreement about that concept. And you come back from grazing studies all over different parts of the world, and you got perhaps a different idea. How does that play out in the family?
Fortunately, I'm from an already progressive family, I would say, and that was probably the impetus for me to go out and do what I did, because that was the environment that I grew up in.
So they were supportive of this?
Very supportive. Very supportive. And so they're receptive to any of my ideas, insights. Of course, that culture that you described of ranching, the conservative, traditional, mm-hmm. that does exist. But it exists for good reason, I would say. And also in my experience, every place I went to, even though almost all of them were very progressive, there was a certain element of this is how we do things, this is how we've always done things, but this is why. And there would always be a good reason. The difference between progressive ranching and maybe more conservative ranching is that progressive ranchers are open-minded to hearing out other ideas. They might not entertain them for very long, whereas conservative ranching are more prone, in my experience, to shut down once an idea outside of the box is brought up.
So you come back from this extensive, diverse experience. You've been on the ground a year on this particular piece of land, this ecosystem, whatever you want to call it. How do you apply what you've learned broadly to this piece of ground?
It's mostly in the form of observations, I would say, because right now my purpose as I see it is becoming a part of this place again. Mm-hmm. And a part of that has to do with the respect for its nuances, the landscape's nuances. And you can't make any significant changes, I don't think, until you fully understand the place that you're in. And so my training up to coming back to the ranch has been really in observing. And so that's just carried over into my current position.
And I'm going to hypothesize that since your family has been innovative in range management, has been open to HRM, that any transitional activities or management techniques you'd apply, you probably don't have the risk of family rupture, which could occur in a different environment, fair?
Yes, that's correct.
Yep. Two questions. First, you have spent the large majority of your young life, to me young life, getting ready for this. Do you feel ready?
Yes, I do. And I think that's a very important thing for a transition to successfully happen. I'm very fortunate in that many times transitions occur out of necessity, out of tragic circumstances. Mm-hmm. This is not that by any means, and I have this. I'm also fortunate enough to have the support of everyone around me, which isn't always the case.
Your either. Extended family.
Extended family, ranch employees, friends, everyone. And there was a certain amount of learning that needed to happen on my part that I felt in order to make me ready. And I now feel that I am ready.
You'll be the fifth generation of your family. I think your family goes back on that land of the 1860s. Does that matter to you in any way?
Hugely. Maybe not so much as a thought as it does as a feeling. And it's something I can feel every day I walk out my door onto the ranch. Every day I go out to work, I feel that.
Cooper Hibbard, I very much regret to say we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for being with us on Home Ground. I wish you good luck.
Thank you, Brian.
And to our listeners, many thanks for being with us. We hope you'll join us next week. Home Ground is an independent production of Artemis Common Ground and does not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station. Post-production by Valtron Recording Studios. We welcome your ideas for new programs at www.homegroundradio.org. Home Ground is made possible by grants from the Liz Claiborne Art Ortenberg Foundation, Cinnabar Foundation, Humanities Montana, and the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication about issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. We'll